'Tis a gift to be simple. 'Tis a gift to be free. 'Tis a gift to come down where we ought to be. It sounds nice. It's a pretty song, right? And we like to admire those Shakers, those old-timey people who wrote it and sang it. We appreciate their simple ways, at least from a distance, and we love their furniture, right? But do we really believe it? Do any of us want to actually come down where we ought to be? I wonder. There was once a Peanuts cartoon where Lucy is saying, exhorting in big letters how she always does, "I don't want any downs. I only want ups, ups, ups." I think that's a diagnosis of our country. You know, our economy is built on this promise of upward mobility, which now, unfortunately, is more of a myth than a promise, because it's less and less possible for those who are stuck at the bottom. This upward orientation is hardwired into us and into our faith tradition, too, especially on the Unitarian side. There's a print in my office that Valerie Osborne, about a year ago, was given by a neighbor of hers who rescued it from the trash. It's a relic from the early 20th century, and you see them if you go around UU churches, and I'm actually really happy to have one. It has all this patriarchal language. It's simple. You can come in and check it out, but the last line is what I want to lift up for you. It says, "The progress of mankind onward and upward forever." That was our faith early in the 20th century. But then, you know what happened? World War I, World War II. We had this optimistic belief in human potential and achievement. We actually said out loud and in writing that our intellect and our technology and time would eventually combine to make everything better. And we were wrong. And we saw that first in World War I when millions of men died fighting over a few square miles of European soil. By the time of the Second World War, which also brought the Holocaust and nuclear bombs dropped on large cities, the sunny optimism of liberal religion had been dealt a serious setback. As much as we might wish it otherwise, human progress is never assured, is never a given. And if you consider these days we're living in, our hungry, overpopulated, over-militarized world, if you stop for a minute and think about melting polar ice caps and our threatened atmosphere and the fact that some experts think we've already crossed the point of no return when it comes to climate change, it's probably more rational to think that our future is bleak, that we're not headed up, that we're headed down. But you know, you can't even say that in America and get elected. You can say all kinds of crazy stuff and get elected. But you can't say that. You can't say our best days might be behind us. Though it may be a gift to come down where we ought to be, the Shakers certainly believe that. Few of us seek out the opportunity to think less of ourselves, to ever take ourselves down a couple of notches. But that is actually what I am commending to you today. It's actually a sign of health to be realistic about our weaknesses as well as our strengths. In his letter to the Romans, the Apostle Paul admonished them, "Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are." I know some people who could hear that advice, but they wouldn't listen anyway. Jungian psychology knows that an inflated sense of self often precedes a deflation. You remember that old saying, right? Pride goeth before a fall. We may not want to get pulled down to where we ought to be. We may resist that with everything we've got. But there is something to be said for actually being down there, down to earth, down on our knees. Because it's down there that we will see and experience things as they are, rather than as we might wish them to be, as we see them through our rose-colored glasses. I hope you know the saying that preachers preach the sermons they themselves need to hear. So I'm preaching this to myself as much as to any of you. When I am feeling tired and worn, one of the things my soul craves is to go out walking, to get out under the sky, to feel the earth under my feet. And being out there, I'm drawn toward walking through graveyards and through the woods. And it restores me, but sometimes in more of a somber than exuberant way. Maybe that's just my temperament. Anyone want to go take a walk through a cemetery and contemplate our mortality? Maybe a couple of you, but a bunch of you going like, yeah, not so much. But it is good to remember that we are dust, and to dust we shall return. Most Sundays, I try to have something to say or offer that will lift you up, try to remind you of your goodness, try to offer you some hope. If you haven't noticed already, that's not what I'm going for today. In this month when we're contemplating evil, I sense that we need to get down to earth, down to where we ought to be. We need to acknowledge that evil is not just out there somewhere, but the potential for it exists in each one of us. I don't think that evil is like sometimes how it's portrayed in churches or in scary movies as this free-floating force that's just out there roaming around the world looking for places to land. I don't buy those personifications of evil, like the devil with his pitchfork and his red tail. But clearly there is evil. Clearly there are bad things being done all the time. Rabbi Harold Kushner wrote a wonderful book called When Bad Things Happen to Good People. I'm imagining another book that I wish somebody would write, Why Good People Do Bad Things. But then that makes me wonder, are we good? We like to think we are. In this tradition, particularly, and in our country, our first UU principle asserts the worth, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Years ago, I heard Bill Schultz, who was president of our Unitarian Universalist Association, and then he became president of the UU Service Committee. He gave a talk called What Torture Taught Me. He talked about his context as being president of UUSC, where he met and had conversations with both victims and perpetrators of torture. And after hearing these stories and seeing the effects of torture up close, of what we humans are capable of doing to one another, he said he thinks we need to reconsider that word inherent, as in inherent worth and dignity. He said we need to reconsider our belief that human goodness and worth and dignity are automatically a given. He says it's our myth. In the Gospel of Mark, a rich young man addresses Jesus as good teacher. And Jesus seems to get mad and respond back. He says, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone." Sometimes I worry that our need to see ourselves as good can actually keep us from doing more good in the world. For example, there's a growing awareness that there's a race problem in our country. Some folks still deny it, but it's getting harder and harder to see, if you're paying attention at all, that life is more difficult. It's harder to not see that life is more difficult and more dangerous for people of color than it is for white folks. And I'm all for white people doing our own anti-racism work. We need to do this. But I start to worry about it because I think many of us bring to it a sense of purity, a need to be right and okay 100% of the time. And I see this sometimes in our efforts at anti-racism work. We want to convince ourselves and others, "I'm not racist." We don't want anybody to ever think that we are better and more evolved and smarter than that. It's scary to admit that we each have inherent bias, but we do. We do. I suppose we fear that admitting that would start us on a slippery slope that would lead to being lumped with those hateful racists who seem emboldened these days. But I think we have to start there by claiming that we all have inherent bias. It's what we learn. The way to fight evil, I believe, is by first acknowledging it and naming it within ourselves, by having the courage to look at our own faults and confess them, to take responsibility and make amends. Those of you who have been part of 12-step programs know how important that is, a full accounting of your own life and actions. Paradoxically, it is by dropping down into these depths, spending time exploring our own shadow side, that we will start to find some solid ground to stand on. And that is how we will find our way to be free. This is good and important work, and it's hard work. One sermon isn't going to do anything except maybe encourage you to think about getting started. There are helpful resources available, but this is work we need to be willing to do. What I'm trying to say is this: we each need to learn how to deal with our own stuff so we don't project it onto others and out into the world. And this happens on all levels: individual, institutional, national. Many of us are fired up these days about all the injustice we see in our world. And I just want to offer a warning that we would be wise to not fall into the practice of projecting our shadow onto people we dislike or disagree with. This is the wisdom of those who practice nonviolent resistance. They know how easy it can be in one's zeal for fighting for a cause you know is just to slip into actions that you would find reprehensible if people on the other side were doing them. We need to have what Gandhi talked about, soul force, the willingness to stand where we are planted, to bear the cost of that, because that's where our power will come from. If we want to do good in the world, we need to do this soul work. And I suggest, rather than going out thinking we are so good, that a better preparation might be by acknowledging that we are broken people living in a broken world. That we often fall short of our own hopes and aspirations. But take heart. Everybody does. We're in good company here, right? Rabbi Edwin Friedman says, "The bad news is none of us can change anybody else. You can only change yourself." That's the bad news. The good news is when you change yourself, you actually have an effect on other people that you never thought was possible. You can affect more change in the world than you thought you could by doing your own work. I chose our reading this morning because of how it asks us to look at our own stuff. Adrian Rich writes, "Don't be fooled. This isn't a Russian poem. This is not somewhere else but here. Our country moving closer to its own truth and dread. This may be a scary place, this place of our own truth and dread, but isn't it also a place of possibility where we face the deeper and fuller and, dare I say, more beautiful truth of who we are, where we are able to deal with reality rather than our fantasies of how we wish things were? And isn't this where we need to start as individuals and as a nation if we ever want things to get better? Down there, down here, if I've been successful in bringing you down today a little bit, where we ought to be. The good news is that as we work our way through the shadows, we will always have companions for the journey. And we will start to find our way toward the light. And through it all, we will discover that love is with us, calling us on. That hope is ever with us, calling us on. Faith is with us, calling us on. We will be reminded in the middle of the struggle that life calls us on, now and always. Amen. So let's sing about this. Life calls us on. It's printed on the back of your order of service.